Good afternoon, guys. It's another special session of the Lunch Break Show. So today we have a very special guest. We have an author, a writer, and a sports fan. So today we are going to do things a little bit different. Usually on Fridays we have our normal gig guides, but today we are going to be talking about sports and digital media. So before we get things started, I'd like to have my guest introduce himself and we can kick off the conversation.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on here. I'm Brian Rezepa. I have a book releasing soon called You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports, which basically gives a layout for anyone that wants to work in sports, kind of, you know, how the hiring process works, how to get hired, how to get connected to different jobs, and then just kind of some day-to-day background. Besides the book, I also have some experience working in sports at the minor league level. I worked in communications for one of the biggest minor league baseball teams in the United States. And then outside of that, I have done quite a bit of writing work at websites across the globe. So I really appreciate you having me on and looking forward to our conversation today.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Before we dive deep into the conversation, you had mentioned the book that you work in administration. Having been or looking at the landscape of the U.S., how is digital media being utilized, especially during the COVID era that we are living in at the moment?
Yeah, and I think that it's probably, especially within the sports world, probably more important than ever. For most of the country, we're still working in environments where fans are not allowed to come to the games and attend games and things like that. And we're not able to do in-person events and things of that nature. So, you know, it is more crucial than ever to connect with fans via social media and through different outlets such as that, just to continue creating that connection, especially at the minor league level. A lot of their revenue is coming from in person at the gate, you know, merchandise sales in person. So if you don't connect with people via digital media and through social media, you know, you might lose those people for good. And for a lot of these different sports teams, which, you know, their seasons were canceled and things like that, you know, they might not have the opportunity to, you know, come back whenever things start back up again.
Okay. Then can we maybe go a little bit and try and break down what digital media entails?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally, as teams look at their different, you know, digital media plans, social media is, again, going to be one of the largest ones out there. So all the different platforms and those platforms that continue to expand seemingly, you know, on a daily basis, you know, where what started off with maybe Facebook has now grown into Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, TikToks even, you know, just kind of continuing that online branding and things like that. But beyond the social media aspect of it, you know, you get into different forms of marketing and things like that outside of the social media. So, you know, just working on general, you know, kind of classical advertising, things like that, you know, running podcasts, other things of that nature, you know, with how internet has become such a vital portion of any business, sports teams, you know, continue to adapt and grow within that digital media landscape.
Okay. And then looking at the current landscape, let me take for example, in our country, sports has been cancelled, or if I may put it, there hasn't been any activity for the past 7 months, I think, since the COVID outbreak. But then, in terms of the digital aspects of our teams and our athletes, how would you advise them in terms of how should they monetize their digital presence?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, fortunately for us, there was a little bit of a break at this early portion of, you know, the shutdowns and everything where everything was shut down. But now we kind of have sports up and running. We went through the NBA finals. You know, we went through the NHL Cup. You know, we're rolling forward with the World Series in baseball and it, continuing to go forward with football as well. So, you know, at the at the highest level professional, you know, they've been able to keep going. But like I mentioned with the minor leagues, you know, that engagement has largely come online because, you know, they have not had the opportunity to continue playing games. And so, you know, what you see a lot of different teams doing at that level is just hosting different like fan Q&As with, you know, like with the coaches, with top players, things like that, just, you know, continuing to create that bond, doing fan giveaways, holding different virtual events and things like that. Just anything that you can do to continue, you know, to make sure really that people don't forget about you. Anything that you can do to continue to expand upon that is definitely, you know, something that you should pursue.
Okay. And then I think you spoke about the aspect of teams. As an athlete, what then should I be doing? Because we saw even during the NBA finals, your LeBrons, your ADs were tweeting, were doing all kinds of activity just to get their fans engaged. As an athlete, what do I need to do?
I mean, so it's like you had mentioned with, you know, LeBron is as active as ever, whereas generally, you know, during the playoffs, he would not be tweeting at all. He was more active this year. And I think a lot of that is probably based in, you know, one of the biggest things that you're seeing currently with athletes as far as staying involved is, you know, getting involved in social issues and things of that nature. And, you know, while that is kind of divisive between, you know, some fans of the sport of not liking the games, I guess, as they say, politicized, you know, a lot of people a lot of athletes are using their platform to, you know, advance whatever activist causes that they may do. And, you know, I think that that is a super positive thing. You know, they have these athletes have these platforms, and, you know, to be able to use it for a positive cause is definitely one way to utilize social media. Outside of that, you know, outside of, I guess, that activist kind of mindset would be, you know, kind of the same alley as what a lot of teams are doing. And again, just doing like those Q&As, doing giveaways and things like that on social media. Again, just to kind of expand your reach and to, you know, hold on to your reach as we kind of wait for, I guess, a return to normal, as they say.
Okay. And then you spoke about athletes talking about maybe social issues. There was a particular issue that I think came, it arose 2 weeks back. It was in relation to Lewis Hamilton, in terms of how he was vocal about the racial injustice that was going on. And people, there was debate about allowing such in the sport. And from your case, is it somehow diluting or bringing in certain aspects that may bring the sports into disrepute or conversations that need not to be done in the field?
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, especially, you know, within the U.S., there's a lot of people, especially within like the NBA, kind of looking at them specifically, that took issue as far as, you know, the different branding that they took on, you know, once they returned to play this season, as far as the different causes that they were openly supporting and things like that. A lot of people say that, you know, they want athletes to stick to sports and other things like that. But I mean, I think that you walk a pretty fine line with saying that. I know that, you know, people don't like the act. A lot of people don't like the act of political messaging, you know, as they're watching the games. But, you know, I think that everyone can agree that, you know, outside of the playing field, you know, these athletes are still human. You know, they're not just for us to watch. You know, they have their own different opinions and support their own different causes. And, you know, good for them on, you know, supporting those different causes and taking those different stands within their communities. And so I think as far as, you know, you're looking at it from a team standpoint, you know, you're free to do as, you know, you're free to support the different causes that you want as a team. And, you know, as far as if there's an athlete within your team that doesn't support the causes that you support, I mean, I think that turns into a different conversation. And, you know, it's kind of like any other personnel issue. You know, if there's that much of an issue with someone supporting a particular cause, then, you know, that's something that the team has to face on their own.
Okay. And then moving on to issues of sponsorship, we've seen ever since the start of the league, the football season, especially the European part, there are no fans as we know it, but we've seen teams coming out with certain partners. Some have been sponsoring team lineups, halftime talks, and after game analysis. Is it something to compensate for the amount of money maybe that they are losing due to them not selling any match or any match day tickets?
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think that especially at the minor league levels, teams always have to get creative, but especially now, you know, especially within minor league sports in the U.S., it's really never going to be feasible to be able to, you know, run those leagues if you're not going to be able to have fans. So, you know, we're looking at an environment now where, you know, we probably won't have minor league sports on the scale that they were until, you know, there's a vaccine and things and fans are allowed to come and things of that nature. But especially, you know, at the professional level, you know, teams are getting creative as far as making up that revenue. And I'm sure there's no way that they'll be able to make up that gap completely, especially, you know, I guess to talk about the NBA specifically, you know, the ratings were so much lower than usual as far as TV. So while their TV contracts are locked in right now, you know, that's something to consider moving forward as well. But as far as, you know, different sponsorships and things of that nature, to keep people involved and get those revenues back up, a lot of teams have taken on the kind of standpoint of, while we're not able to have fans in attendance, they have different like cardboard cutouts in the stands and things like that, where I think it was the Boston Red Sox specifically, they sold cardboard cutouts for like $500 that would sit in the stands. And if that cardboard cutout got hit by a ball throughout the season, they would get tickets for a game next year. So, I mean, I think that that's a lot of what you're seeing now too, is that, you know, while these people are super creative that are within these marketing departments and within these digital media departments, these are generally creative people. But now with coronavirus, and you're seeing this creativity expressed on an even larger scale too. And you know, you have to get super creative to make up that gap in revenue. And, you know, like I said, I don't think that it would be tough to be able to make up millions and millions of dollars of revenue, but, you know, they're doing what they can. And a lot of it has shown pretty solid results.
Okay. You mentioned you're working with minor league teams. In terms of the digital structure or the digital presence of such teams, what are some of the considerations that having worked with them should be your foundations for teams that are looking at exploring other avenues in terms of digital?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the number one metric and the number one thing that teams need to be working towards is fan engagement. You know, like I said, especially at the minor league level, you're working with teams that are pretty much, you know, these are not large scale national teams. These are teams that are going to be working within their communities. So anything to drive that further connection and that to grow that bond within those communities is definitely what teams need to be shooting for. So whether that means, you know, partnering with different community groups and things like that. I know here in the Detroit area, and, you know, with the Mudhens, they've done a lot of work with children's groups, with the hospitals, you know, things like that, just to, you know, make their presence felt within the community. And, you know, that extends to a digital world as well. And so whether it be like sponsored posts and things like that, and, you know, co-promoting events and things of that nature, you know, what's most important, you know, to kind of round it back is, again, just driving that community bond and, you know, really making sure that people know that they're part of the community and, you know, they're working towards, you know, the same goals that the community itself is.
Okay. And then looking at from your aspect, you are I'd say a journalist, if I may say, or a writer. With the advent of social media, information now gets published within an instant. How has digital media affected maybe the role of journalists or even print media?
Yeah, I mean, you see that regularly with print media kind of scaling back as the years go on, and you know, people not necessarily relying on newspapers quite as much and moving more towards an online environment. But I think, you know, a lot of the issues that pop up as far as journalism and social media is that, you know, where at one time, you know, it might have been a race to be the first to get this story accurate. Now, you know, you see a lot of times with false reporting and things of that nature, it's a race to who's first, and regardless of the necessarily of the accuracy. And, you know, I think that leads down a super dangerous path. Because, you know, you see with things like clickbait articles and clickbait headlines and things like that, that just a lot of people will not read beyond the headline. And a lot of this important context will be lost, and people form their opinions off of their headlines. So, you know, like I said, it is a pretty dangerous path to go down. And, you know, as far as a race to who finishes first and to who reports that story out first, you know, I think they say that a lie can travel around the world 1,000 times before the truth comes out. And I think that is something that a lot of times you see something on Twitter that comes out and it's retweeted, 15,000 times. And then, you know, a couple hours later, there's a correction that's listed and there's 200 retweets. And so that impression of that first story that, you know, isn't accurate, you know, that impression sticks with people much more than that correction is. And so I think that, you know, I know there's different fact checkers and things of that nature, but, you know, it's something that, you know, people need to evaluate as they kind of move forward, as social media becomes more and more prominent within the field of journalism. You know, you just have to make sure that, you know, you're following people and you're following people that are, you know, concentrated in the facts and not necessarily on being burst.
Oh, okay. And then there was a question that someone sent me. They are an amateur athlete, and then they were asking in terms of what do they need to do in terms of representing themselves well on digital platforms. Should they be blogging? Should they be documenting their journey either through YouTube? Should they be on TikTok? For an athlete, what would you say are some of the key things that they need to be doing on digital?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a really important question because, you know, having worked with high school coaches, having talked to college coaches and things like that, you know, one of the bigger things is that, you know, as these high school athletes move into the college level, coaches and, you know, recruiters and things like that are definitely looking at social media. So I think a good general rule of thumb is to not post anything you wouldn't want your grandma to see. That's probably just generally how you should look at it. You know, you don't want to be posting different inappropriate things and obvious things like that, you know, swearing and other things of that nature. As far as, you know, kind of growing your digital brand at that level, you know, anything that you can do as far as including your highlights and things like that, that's going to be huge as far as, you know, working with college coaches. I know that obviously, you know, most people are not going to have the chance to play high-level college athletics, you know, especially in the United States. There's Division II, there's Division III, there's, you know, lower levels like that. That there's different opportunities, but you really have to work for them. And part of that is, you know, getting highlights out to these different college coaches and, you know, showing who you are beyond the field, showing that you're an upstanding student, showing that you're, you know, can be a positive contribution to their team, to their college and things like that. So I think that, you know, it's just like a matter of, you know, being clean on social media and, you know, doing what you can to promote yourself as someone that would be a positive contributor to their program.
Okay. Are there any key maybe digital platforms that you can say definitely as an athlete, these are some of the social platforms that I need to be on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that Twitter is probably the biggest one. You know, that's probably where you're going to have the biggest reach, especially, you know, when you're working in the context of reaching out to college coaches and things like that. Beyond that, you know, same thing, same kind of idea as Facebook, just because of the size of their usership base. I would say that those two are definitely like the crucial ones that you should, if you're really looking to grow your brand as an athlete, you should definitely be on Facebook and Twitter. Kind of outside of there, if, you know, Instagram would be probably third on that list, but I wouldn't consider that to be nearly as crucial as Facebook or Twitter. You know, like I guess with Instagram, you can use that to give people more of an inside look at your life, you know, through photos. You know, a photo says 1,000 words. But, you know, I wouldn't consider that nearly as important as Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, Facebook and Twitter. And then having interacted with some athletes or some media personalities, they have a problem in terms of how do they come up with content for their social media platforms. Some would eventually get stuck in terms of, should I be posting this? Is it something that I need to be shared? Should there be a fine line in terms of what they post across their various platforms?
Yeah, I mean, especially I think, you know, within the United States at this time, things are, I mean, to an extent, kind of contentious, to say the least. So I think that, you know, you really do have to put consideration. You need to think twice before, you know, posting various, whatever those opinions may be, that may spark controversy and things like that. You just really need to be super cautious about what it is that you're posting. As far as on the content creation side, I think that, you know, a lot of the inspiration for your posts can just come from fans themselves. And so, you know, what you see a lot of athletes, you know, doing Ask Me Anything on Reddit. And so, you know, just through questions and answers with the fans, or whether it be like an Instagram Q&A or something of that nature, you know, taking away from those Q&As, not making it a one-time thing. If you see trends in the questions that you're being asked, you know, if fans are asking about your daily workout routine or your diet or things like that, you know, if you see those questions like that regularly, you know, doing a blog post or doing a vlog or things like that, you know, it shows that you're paying attention to your fans and that you're, you know, creating content that they want to see.
Oh, okay. And then how important is YouTube to athletes? Because I think we are talking earlier before the show to say the reason we met, it was through a video that I had put up on my YouTube channel, and then we got to interact. How then is YouTube important to an athlete?
Yeah, from an athlete, I guess it just depends on the level of athletics that you're playing. And so, like I had said, with like a high school student wanting to move into college, you know, having their highlights on YouTube would be a good way of getting discovered. You know, just getting their name out there, and especially, you know, just from straight up Googling someone, you can find right to where their YouTube page is, because it'll usually be one of the top results. As far as at the professional level, you know, that's again kind of the same mindset as with Instagram, is, you know, providing that inside look at your life. You know, Tom Brady had done a series, I think it was on Facebook, but it's a video series of kind of his, like, one of his last seasons in New England. And it just kind of showed him behind the scenes interacting with his family, showing what he did to prepare for the season, working as a quarterback that's over 40 years old, kind of unheard of. You know, just showing what he did to prepare and kind of to, you know, show his mindset on, you know, attacking sports and attacking life. So I think, again, anything to kind of further drive that connection, and I don't know if there's many better ways to do so than, you know, through video, to connect with people and to, you know, drive that genuine connection with your fan base.
Oh, okay. And then, having looked at the current digital media, Nensky, what would you say are some of the biggest trends that we need to watch out for, both for teams and even athletes and sports administrators?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things, obviously, that you're seeing now, you know, like we've kind of touched on to this point, is that, you know, it's more important than ever, is you need to, you know, invest resources as far as from a team standpoint and from an administrator standpoint. You need to invest resources in your digital media department, because we don't know when fans are going to be back. It could be a few months from now. It could be a year from now. So we need to prepare, and these teams need to prepare for the event that, you know, we don't have a normal environment as far as fans in the stands for quite some time. So, you know, whether it be hiring on digital media people and growing your department, or just diversifying the content and, you know, really, really plugging your Facebook, really plugging your Twitter, things like that. As far as from an athlete standpoint, you know, like I had mentioned, with activism kind of becoming, I mean, it's always been acceptable to an extent, but kind of more within the general social realm, with athletes getting involved. You know, I think just, you know, making sure that you vet the different causes that you're working with is going to be super important. We've seen it a couple times come up where, you know, athletes kind of run into trouble because they're working with a group that has, you know, a questionable background, a questionable history, or, you know, questionable events, things like that. So, you know, just being very careful about what you're getting involved in. And, you know, once you do come up with that decision, you know, by all means, feel free to, you know, promote those different things that you're passionate about. And I think that that's kind of just moving forward. That's what we're looking at, is that, you know, with COVID and the different shutdowns and whatnot, I think that, you know, it's more important than ever.
Oh, Mr. Brian, I think we covered quite a lot during our session. Let me just thank you for joining me today. This was just a quick introduction. You will definitely be back for the book preview that we'll be doing in a couple of weeks, or in a week so. Any last words to my viewers?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, if anyone has any questions for me specifically, I'm on Twitter. You can find me there. It's just at my name, which is listed on the screen here. And then obviously, you know, like we said, we're going to be discussing a book. But, you know, if you want to purchase it ahead of time, you can find it on Amazon. You're Hired, A Guide to Working in Sports. And, you know, like I said, I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. Guys, thank you once again for the lunch break show. Today I had Mr. Brian, an author and a writer of a book called You Are Hired. We'll definitely be doing a book review next time, and we'll definitely be having him back for the next session. So, Mr. Brian, thank you for joining me, and we'll definitely be in touch for the book review.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day here.
All right. Bye.